I want to begin by looking at several accounts of Jesus' interaction with folks in the Gospels and his performing of miracles and healing people, or sometimes not healing people, and see what we can learn from that. The first account I'd like for us to start with is in Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 6. We find that Jesus has returned to his hometown of Nazareth. We read in verse 1, Jesus went out from there and came into his hometown. His disciples followed him, and when the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many listeners were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get these things, and what is this wisdom given to him, and such miracles as these performed by his hand? Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon? Are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his own relatives and in his own household." I find this account to be particularly interesting and really quite saddening to me. Jesus comes to his hometown, and the folks who knew him, they are really not interested in listening to him. In fact, they're offended at him. Who is he to come in here and tell us these things? We changed his diaper when he was a kid. And we read one of the most bizarre statements in verse 5, that he could do no miracle there. That's strange, isn't it? That Jesus could do no miracle there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and he healed them. But besides that, I mean, he couldn't really do anything there in Nazareth. We wonder why. Well, let me suggest to you, it wasn't because Jesus lacked the power or the ability to heal those people. Flip over in your Bibles a couple pages to Mark chapter 9. We find an account where this father has come to Jesus' disciples and his son is troubled by all these distresses. He's got a demon, and the demon is causing him to go into convulsions and throw him down and into the fire and into the water, and it's doing harm to him. And the father brings his son to Jesus' disciples and says, "Heal him." And guess what? Jesus' disciples couldn't heal him. And now Jesus walks up and he's wondering, what is this commotion that's going on? And one in the crowd answered him, verse 17 of Mark chapter 9. "Teacher," he says, "I brought my son possessed with a spirit which makes him mute. And whenever it sees him, it slams him to the ground. He foams at the mouth. He grinds his teeth. He stiffens out. I told your disciples to cast it out, and they could not do it." And he answered them and said, "Oh, unbelieving generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring him to me." And so they brought the boy to him. And of course, when he saw him immediately, the spirit threw him into a convulsion, and falling to the ground, he began rolling around and foaming at the mouth. And so Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From his childhood. It is often thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." I think you hear the desperation in the father's voice. I mean, "I brought it to your disciples. I told them to do something. I thought they would be able to do something. They couldn't do anything. If you could do anything, please do something." And notice Jesus' response. Jesus said to him, "If you can." And Jesus almost is, to me, he almost sounds a little bit offended by this guy. "Well, if you could do anything." What do you mean, "if I can do anything"? All things are possible to him who believes. And immediately the boy's father cried out and said, "I do believe, help my unbelief." And ultimately Jesus does. He heals the young man here on this occasion. You see, it wasn't a question of whether or not Jesus had the ability or whether he could do something. Obviously Jesus could do something. The question was, did the father, did the boy, did they believe enough in Jesus' ability to do it? And of course, Jesus proves that he can by healing the boy on this occasion. But it's that belief of the person asking. That's what seems to be the hang-up here. Jesus has the power to do it. The question is, do they believe? And it's interesting if you go back there to Mark chapter 6. Right after it said in verse 5 that he could do no miracle there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he, that is Jesus, marveled at their unbelief. Why could Jesus do no miracle in Nazareth? It wasn't because he lacked the power to do the miracle. It's because the people didn't believe enough in him to come to him for the healing. So Jesus certainly has the capacity to heal. Well, maybe Jesus doesn't heal, though, sometimes because he doesn't want to. You ever thought about that? Now, go back to the beginning of Mark's gospel in Mark chapter 1. We read about a leper who comes to Jesus, and in verse 40 of Mark chapter 1, he came to Jesus beseeching him and falling on his knees before him, saying, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." This leper here obviously believed that Jesus was powerful enough to heal him of his ailment, of his leprosy. And he comes to him, beseeching him. He says, "I know you can do this." The question in the leper's mind was, "Lord, are you willing to do this? Do you want to do this?" And of course, Jesus dispels any doubt here on this occasion. It says in verse 41, "Moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, and he said to him, 'I am willing, be cleansed.' And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was clean." And so we see here that Jesus has the ability, the power to heal, and he has the desire to heal those who would believe in him and come to him. But one of the things that I find interesting as I read through the Gospels and the healing that Jesus does is that Jesus doesn't just heal people indiscriminately. And he certainly doesn't heal people against their will. If they believe in him, if they come to him and want to be healed, he will heal them. He has the power and he wants to do that. He's waiting for them to come to him. We read another account of healing and questioning of Jesus. This one's found in Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 18. And then after this, we'll come to John chapter 5. But in Luke chapter 18 and verse 35, we read that Jesus was approaching Jericho and a blind man was sitting by the road begging. And hearing the crowd going by, he began to inquire what this was. And they told him, "Well, Jesus of Nazareth was passing by." And he called out saying, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And those who led the way were sternly telling him to be quiet. But he kept crying out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." So you get this picture. You got this blind beggar on the side of the road. And he finds out there's a large crowd going past. He doesn't know who's in it, but he asks, and they say, "Well, Jesus of Nazareth." Well, he knows something about Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus has the power to heal, and he likes to heal people who believe in him. And so he's calling out to him, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And people are like, "Shut up, man. He's too busy for this. He's on his way to Jerusalem. He doesn't have time to deal with your problems." But he keeps crying out all the more. And Jesus stopped and commanded that he be brought to him. And when he came near, he questioned him. And notice his question. "What do you want me to do for you?" What a stupid question, Jesus. I mean, isn't it obvious? He's blind. What do you think he wants you to do for him? You ever stopped and asked yourself, why did Jesus ask the question? Obviously, Jesus had the ability to do way more than just heal the man's blindness. But he wants to know, what exactly is it that you want? And the man responds, "Lord, I want to regain my sight." And so Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight, your faith." Notice, your faith has made you well. It was because he actually believed that Jesus could do it. He called out for him in pity and he said, "Can you please help me?" And Jesus granted him his request. He healed him. But again, it illustrates that Jesus doesn't presume to override anyone's free will. Even though he can heal and he is willing to heal, the person has to want to be healed before Jesus will do it. And now that brings us to this other account in John chapter 5, which I find fascinating. In John chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, it says, "After these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there was in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porticos. And in these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel of the Lord went down on certain seasons into the pool and stirred up the water. And whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in was made well from whatever disease with which he was afflicted. And a man was there who had been ill for 38 years. We find out in this account that his illness is that he's actually lame. He can't walk. And we read maybe one of the most bizarre questions in verse 6. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" What an odd question. Have you ever wondered why would Jesus ask the lame man this question? Do you want to be healed? The reality is that if the lame man were healed, his whole life would radically change. He has been lame for 38 years. Now, it doesn't tell us in the text how old the guy is, but I don't think I'm stepping too far out on a limb to suggest to you that if he has been in this condition for 38 years, he has been unable to walk for more, probably way more than half of his life. Even if he lived to a ripe old age of 50 or 60 back then, and he's towards the end of his life, 3/4 of his life has been spent being lame. But I would suggest that probably he's probably a guy in his late 30s, early 40s. Something probably happened to him as a child, and he spent most of his life, if not all of his life, unable to walk. If he could walk, that would mean a whole new life for him. A whole different life for him. There would be no more sitting by the pool every day waiting and begging and hoping that somebody else might come by and take pity on him and give him a few copper coins or give him a morsel to eat or to drag him from there to somewhere else. It would mean that he would have to get up and literally stand on his own 2 feet. And he'd have to start working. He'd have to get a job. He'd have to find some way of providing for himself. Maybe even to the point where he then would be able to have enough to turn around and help those who were still unable to help themselves. I wonder, as I read this account, I wonder if this guy who's been sitting by the pool waiting for his turn, his chance to be healed, if he had really thought about all of that yet. I mean, I'm sure he thought every day about how wonderful it would be to be able to get up and walk. I wouldn't have to lay here anymore. I would like this impediment, this ailment, I would like this disease, I would like for it to leave me so that I wouldn't feel so uncomfortable, so that I wouldn't be so hampered. But had he really thought about all the implications of what would then be required of him? Now it would be a life of responsibility and obligation, not a life of pain and suffering. Had he considered all the implications of what being healed would require of him? And I wonder if that's why Jesus asks him here, Do you want to be healed? Think about some parallels for us in this regard. We may be tired of the way that our lives are going. We may be tired of the troubles and the problems that our own sinful ways have caused in our lives. We don't like the hardship that it brings. We don't like the inconvenience. We don't like the pain. We don't like the difficulty. We don't like the suffering. And we'd like for that bad stuff to just go away. But the question is, do we really want to be healed? Have you ever thought that? Do you really want to be healed by the Lord? Are you ready for that kind of change and transformation that really being healed by God would bring about in your life, in your thinking, in your conduct, in your obligations and responsibilities? Or are we just so interested in getting rid of the handicaps in our lives that we haven't really contemplated the full implications of what it would mean to truly be healed by Jesus? Maybe we have thought about those, and when we weigh it, the sad reality is that we realize, I don't actually want to be healed. At least not yet. You know, it's interesting in James chapter 4 and verse 2, he talks about the idea that we do not have because we do not ask. And I think sometimes we don't have the healing in our lives that would be so beneficial to us because we're not asking God to really heal us. We don't really want to be healed. Or maybe we want to be healed, but we're scared of what would be involved in that. Sometimes we're just not ready to be healed. We're not ready for that, what that will require of us in our lives. So there's this interesting story in Exodus chapter 8. I think, Justin, you did a devotion talk on it years ago, and it always stuck out in my mind. You called it One More Froggy Night. You know, that plague where God sends frogs over the whole land of Egypt. And Pharaoh, he's already refused to give in and acknowledge who God is multiple times throughout his interactions with Moses and Aaron. And the frogs are all over the land, and they're really just making a pestilence and a problem. And he calls Moses and Aaron, and he says, do something about getting these frogs out of here. And Moses says, well, I tell you what, Pharaoh, here's what I'll do. I'll pray to my God that he'll remove the frogs from you. You let me know when you want them gone. And Pharaoh says one of the weirdest things. He says, make them leave tomorrow. If I'm Pharaoh, I'm going, get them out of here now. But no, tomorrow, pray to your God that they'll leave. I don't know a lot about Pharaoh's heart. I'm hesitant to pass judgment on people's hearts. But from what is revealed to us in Scripture about Pharaoh, is that Pharaoh had a pretty hard heart. And Pharaoh was a pretty prideful and arrogant guy. And I wonder if maybe he wasn't content to have one more froggy night because he just wasn't quite ready yet to acknowledge that God really is the one in charge. Maybe he was hoping against hope that the frogs would leave on their own that night. And he'd be able to say, ha ha, it wasn't your God that did that. Sometimes we put it off because we're not ready to acknowledge what the answer is. We don't like the implications of it. And sometimes we do that same thing. We hold on to our old ways. We hold on to our pride. We hold on to our secret sin or our old conduct, even when we know that that isn't good for us and that God can provide the answer. But we're simply not willing to give in to Him. Go with me to Psalm 51. Psalm 51, this is a psalm of David. After he has been confronted by Nathan about his sin with Bathsheba and against Uriah the Hittite. This is a prayer to God. It's an appeal to God to cleanse him. He says, "Be gracious to me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the greatness of your compassion, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions. My sin is ever before me. Against you, you only I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me. Behold, you desire truth in the innermost being, and in the hidden part you will make me know wisdom. Purify me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear joy and gladness, and let the bones which you have broken rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, renew a steadfast spirit within me, and do not cast me away from your presence, and do not take your Holy Spirit from me, but restore to me the joy of your salvation and sustain me with a willing spirit. Then I will teach the transgressors your ways, and sinners will be converted to you. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God, the God of my salvation. Then my tongue will joyfully sing of your righteousness. O Lord, open my lips that my mouth may declare your praise. For you do not delight in sacrifice, otherwise I'd give it. And you're not pleased with burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." That's a pretty powerful prayer to God when you think about it. This isn't just David going to God and saying, "Yeah, God, I sinned. Sorry about that. Please forgive me." This is David going to God and saying, "God, heal me. Create in me a new heart, God. Transform me entirely so that I can sing your praises. So that I can glorify you, so that I can teach others about you. But I recognize, God, I've got to be a different person than who I am right now in my sin." I'm hesitant to bring up some of the things that I see online because some people are, you know, "Well, that person's a bad person. We don't want to listen to what that person's saying." Well, let me tell you something. I don't care if it's an evil, wicked person who's saying something. If what they're saying is truth, then I think we ought to listen to that. You know, Jesus even said, you know, when the Pharisees tell you to do something, do what they say to do, just don't do what they're doing, because the things they're saying are right, but they're not following it themselves. Some of you may have seen circulating around this clip of a guy named Theo Vaughn, who is investigating Christianity. And he made an observation in a post that I saw lately. He said, "I've been praying to God, and I know there are things in my life and things that I'm doing that are not pleasing to God. They're against the teaching of the Bible. They're wrong. They're immoral." And he said, "I pray to God to take those things away from me." And he goes, "But if I'm being honest, there's a part of me that even as I'm praying and asking God to help me overcome that evil, there's a part of me that knows I'm going to do it again. That even as I'm asking you, God, to help me not do this, I know that I probably am." And I think to myself, I've prayed that way too. "God, I know that what I'm doing is wrong. It's sinful. And I want to stop doing that, or at least I say that I want to stop doing that. Help me, God, to stop doing that, even though I know I'm probably going to do that thing again." And so here's what Theo said, and this is the part that I want to share with you. He said, "I've been praying that same prayer, but instead of just being hypocritical about it, I've also been adding this on to the end of my prayer. God, you know that little part of me that doesn't want to go along with this. That part of me that still wants to keep doing those things. And so, God, I'm not just asking you to take this thing out of my life. I'm asking you to come into that part of me that doesn't want to submit to you and help change that part of me." That is what David is praying here in Psalm 51. David is saying, God, come into my life. Purify me with hyssop so that I will be whiter than snow. Really change me. Get down into the nooks and crannies and those dark parts of my heart and my being and really work on me, God, and transform me. Do we really want God to create in us a new heart? Do you really want to be healed? Because that's what He can do. But are you ready for that kind of change? Are you ready to really let go of your former manner of life and become a new creation in Christ Jesus? Or are you unwilling to fully crucify that old man? Well, too many of us, when we came to Christ and we were baptized, you know, it says in baptism, we crucified the old man, we put him to death. He was buried in baptism, we rise to be a new creature. Too many of us let that old man hang up there on that cross long enough that he was pretty fatal, almost gone, almost expired, but right before he breathed his last, we hurry up and we took him down off that cross. We hooked him up to life support in the back of our brain. And we said, we'll keep you there just in case. And if we've done that, what we need to do is we need to pray that same prayer. God, come into my heart, that dark part of me, that old man that I'm still keeping alive just a little bit, just in case. Help me to fully extinguish that old self. Are we really ready, though, for that kind of change in our lives? Do you really want to be healed? Or does that scare us? Does that cause us to put the Lord off, at least for the time being? You know, sometimes we don't ask because we're afraid of what the answer is going to be. We're afraid where that's going to take us and what will then be expected of us in our lives. I think about Felix. Paul in prison is preaching to Felix and he's preaching to him about righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come. And Felix says, oh, hold on, Paul. That's all great stuff. But I'm not ready for that yet. Felix was afraid of what it would mean to actually listen and submit to the message of the gospel in his life. And so the text tells us there in Acts chapter 24, I think it is, he says that Felix said to Paul, go away for now. And when I find time, or some of the other translations say, when I find a more convenient time, then I'll call you back and you can talk to me about this message. Felix was afraid. Because it wasn't going to be convenient for him to change that drastically. And so he literally put off the gospel. I think sometimes we are confronted in our lives with how powerful Jesus is and how much he could do. And it scares us. You remember that account in Mark chapter 5, where Jesus travels across the Sea of Galilee and comes into the region of the Decapolis, the land of the Gerasenes. And he's met there on the shore by this demon-possessed man who's so strong and so out of control that he's basically running around naked, gashing himself. People have tried to bind him with ropes and chains and they can't contain him. He's just a wild man. Nobody can control this guy. Everybody just avoids him. He's living out in the tombs. And Jesus shows up on the shore, and this guy comes up and bows down before him and is imploring Jesus, please don't torment me. Well, the reason is because that guy is possessed by the legion. Right? Not just one demon, but many demons are possessing this guy. Nobody can control it. And yet, when Jesus arrives, this uncontrollable man, this wild, crazy person, bows down before Jesus.
then Jesus is going to cast these demons out of this man and heal him. And the demons ask permission, well, don't just send us out into the empty spaces. Let us go into those swine over there. And so Jesus says, fine, go for it. And they leave the man, go into the swine. The swine run down the bank and off the cliff and into the water and drown. Imagine that, your ability there, your livelihood is raising swine. Well, there goes next year's proceeds into the lake. That's a total loss. And now people are coming out from the village, from the town, the surrounding area, and what do they see? They don't see that wild man raving and gashing himself and running around naked anymore. They see him sitting there, clothed in his right mind. And they're like, what is going on here? And people are like, that dude over there, that Jesus of Nazareth, he healed him. And as soon as he was healed, all of our pigs just ran off the cliff. And you know what's so interesting about that account? You would think that the people would be like, wow! God is among us! This is amazing! Jesus, come over to my house, let's stay. No, that's not what they do. They say to Jesus, you got that kind of power? Could you leave, please? Be gone. We that's too much. And they ask him to leave. And Jesus does. I think sometimes we're that way. We see the power of God working around us. And we're like, ooh, if I let that power get too close to me, that's going to do some things to me. I'm not ready for that yet. And so we literally ask Jesus, like, hey, I recognize you're powerful. I recognize you can do these things. I know you could change me and transform me completely, but God, please, go away. I don't want that. It's too scary. We ask him to leave. Sometimes people don't want to be healed. But here's the good news. And this is the interesting thing about that story of the healing of that demon-possessed man, is that that guy wanted to go with Jesus now. He wanted to follow him like the other apostles, the other disciples were following him. And Jesus says, no, man, you can't come with me. I've got another job for you, though. I want you to go home. I want you to tell everybody in your family. I want you to tell your neighbors. I want you to tell your friends. I want you to tell the people that you used to work with. I want you to tell everybody that you know what I've done for you. And so you know what's really interesting to me? In Mark's gospel, the very next time that Jesus travels back to that region, let's just read it. Mark chapter 6. After that discouraging time at Nazareth, where he could do no miracle because people weren't believing in him, later on, in Mark chapter 6 and verse 53, when they had crossed over again, they came to a land to land at Gennesaret, and they moored to shore. And when they got out of the boat, immediately the people recognized him. Last time you were here, you healed that demon-possessed man, and we asked you to leave. But notice their response this time. They ran about the whole country and began to carry here and there on their pallets those who were sick to the place where he was. And whenever he entered villages or cities or countryside, they were laying the sick in the marketplaces and imploring him that he might touch that they might touch the fringe of his cloak, and as many as touched it were being cured. God worked in the hearts of those people. People who were too afraid of the power of Jesus because of what that could do in their lives, too uncertain about him, and God used the testimony of that man. Said, this is what God did in me. And now everybody realizes, I want a piece of that too. And they come to him to be healed. So I'd like to leave you this morning with a few final thoughts and a question. Thought number one, recognize that Jesus, that God has the power to heal you. He can forgive you of your sins and he can make you a new creation in him. Thought number two,
Not only does God have the power, but God, Jesus, is willing to heal you. He's already paid the price to accomplish the forgiveness that you need and provide the reconciliation that's necessary to be put back into a relationship with Him and His Father. But thought number three, Jesus and God will not force something on you that you don't really believe in or want or are not yet ready to accept. And so here's the question. Do you want to be healed?